You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
For Samoan New Zealand academic Damon Salesa, the future of New Zealand, and especially Auckland, is Pacific. But it's also one that has overcome widespread segregation, discrimination, and inequality. Salesa lays all this out in his new book, Island Time, New Zealand's Pacific Futures. And earlier I spoke to him about the ideas behind this.
So the idea of Island Time is one that Pacific people use themselves, and it's really a way of describing being late. So I'm coming 7 o'clock Island Time might mean 8 or 8:30, and so this is a play on that. But that I think we're entering a phase of New Zealand's history where essentially Pacific people have become such an enormous part of New Zealand society that they've been able to define what's happening in New Zealand. And so we're entering a phase where Pacific people are not on the fringes of New Zealand society, but are now very much at the centre of parts of it. And so I'm sort of signalling, or trying to signal through that title, that this is a time where Pacific people have some influence and power over all of New Zealand, and that's an island time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you also hint that this change may have already happened or already been set in place, right? It just hasn't.
I mean, in some ways it's a future book. It's a book about the future, but not in a look in a crystal ball way. The argument is kind of that the big changes in New Zealand have already happened, many of them, and we're just starting to realise what they are. And the example I use is that 1 in 4 children born in Auckland over 10 years ago was Pacific. So we knew that was coming. We knew that a quarter of our young people would be Pacific, and yet we haven't really adapted for that future that's, as I use a phrase by a guy, Peter Drucker, that future's already happened. A Pacific future has already happened.
Mm. Let's talk about, because while you have this, I guess, optimistic, futuristic outlook, you've also kind of examined some really stark realities in New Zealand society. I mean, you talk about segregation of Pacific peoples within New Zealand in a way that I don't think is usually, we don't usually talk about segregation in New Zealand, right?
Yeah. Not only do we not talk about segregation in New Zealand, New Zealanders don't even like using the word. But when you look at actual fact-based discussions about this, and you can point to whole parts of Auckland which have virtually no Pākehā people, you can point to schools which have no Pākehā students, what other word should we use? And if we want to think about the future, we have to actually understand our present. You know, the future is not going to arrive via a flying car. It's actually going to grow out of our society. And if these are the roots in the present situation of Auckland, which is a deeply divided and segregated place, then we need to understand that if we want to understand the future.
Mm. And so does that need to be overcome? Does it need to be reconciled if this future is to arrive?
I think previously people thought we had to correct these divisions in order to move forward. What I'm sort of saying is that this is the world we live in, and what's happened is Pacific people have managed to build strength out of that position. So living in places like Ōtāra and Mangere, rather than these being places that need to be turned into Remuera and Takapuna, they're now places of tremendous innovation and almost revolution. And what we really should be doing is looking at these places and seeing what they're doing and ensuring that the way is clear for this kind of innovation and growth. And I think in the past, everyone thought they wanted the world to look like somewhere overseas or a wealthy part of New Zealand. The real New Zealand innovations are going to come from Māori, Pacific people, and the people who are really at home in New Zealand, whether that's Pākehā or Asian folks or whomever. But that's where innovation looks like. Otherwise, we're just really doing what they do overseas, but in New Zealand.
Mm. And I think that's really interesting that there might be some benefits that have come out of this, the way things are, right? I mean, you talk about how we possibly wouldn't have this high number of Labour Pacific MPs out of these areas in South Auckland if there wasn't such a high density of Pacific populations because of, you know, these segregation kind of attitudes.
Yeah. I mean, that's a great example, which is why I use it, is the way that Pacific people have managed to turn this sort of segregation and division, a disenfranchisement from New Zealand, into a place of real political influence, so that, you know, if you take, for instance, the US, which in the whole history of the US, we've had fewer than 10 African-American senators. Right now in the New Zealand Parliament, we have 8 Pacific MPs. And so that shows you how that's actually, the segregation in Auckland has actually been turned into a real strength by Pacific people.
Another thing I want to talk about is the reaction to your book. And we've seen a lot of commentary around diversity in sports, which you do talk about in your book, but not really at length. I mean, what do you make of not only the fact that that's been picked up on, but also kind of when we do hear about Pacific issues, a lot of the time it is around sports, yeah, especially with, you know, diversity and discrimination and that kind of thing.
So part of that is my own fault. I love sport. So true to stereotype. Part of it is I think that there's a real conception in New Zealand that a Pacific story is kind of a sport or an entertainment story. You know, that's where people have shown particular aptitude and talent. But what I use sport for as an illustrator in the book is really that the rugby field is one of the few level playing fields in New Zealand where actual talent allows you to express yourself and achieve. And so we can contrast the level playing field of the rugby field or the league field with the rest of the industry of rugby or league. And that is on the rugby field, where it's a level playing field, Pacific people excel. In the boardrooms and other leadership positions in the rugby industries, which are less about a level playing field and more about people choosing, not necessarily based on merit or excellence or talent, there's a real problem with diversity in those parts of rugby. So you can contrast the boards of rugby unions, which are incredibly non-diverse places, with the rugby teams themselves, which are, you know, almost in many cases majority Pacific and Māori.
Do you think that could almost, sports could almost be kind of where this issue gets some attention, where we start paying more attention to Pacific and broader issues, though? Even though in some ways it does get kind of a bit bogged down in sport, it also carries a lot of energy, right?
Yeah, I think it carries a lot of energy. And of course, to many New Zealand Pacific people, it's a very important and symbolic location. But I actually think in many other parts of New Zealand, they're far ahead. You know, most private companies know if they want good governance, they want far-seeing sort of leadership, your leadership and governors have to look like the people you wish to be connected with. So there's no point having all men on your board, for instance, when your product is makeup directed at teenage girls. And if you want to do something that's dealing with an Auckland, which is pretty much a majority non-white population, you know, you want people that know those people and those markets and those audiences and those communities. And so private enterprise has often responded far more quickly in this case than institutions like the New Zealand Rugby Union or the New Zealand Rugby League, which are actually in many ways quite conservative.
There's a couple of chapters in your book dedicated to Pacific politics, and I don't think there's a lot of commentary around that. We've seen a lot of commentary around Māori politics, yeah, especially in this past election. But I mean, I wonder at that kind of governmental level, especially with our new government that's come in, do you think that's going to see any kind of major shifts on Pacific peoples?
Yeah, I think, I mean, probably at the heart of the book is actually a story about housing and the way that housing is radically different for Pacific people than it is for everyone else. So Pacific people in Auckland have only a 16% home ownership rate. You know, and Pākehā New Zealand is panicking at a 50% home ownership rate. I mean, that's a rate that Pacific people haven't had for nearly 40 years. And so that particular story, which is very much connected to the story of government in this country because of Pacific people's reliance on renting and particularly state housing, means that that's probably the big story that I wanted sort of push out in the book. And behind that then is this idea of political change in New Zealand, that, you know, there's always been a real reward for Pacific people and that their close connection with the political left has delivered them MPs reliably. But the risk has always been when the left is out of government, what happens to Pacific issues? And in the previous national government, we actually saw a serious attempt to try and wrest Pacific voters from the left. But I think what we saw in the last election is that that was more of a flash in the pan, and that National is probably looking to other ethnic communities before the Pacific now. And so there is a really interesting political story there, and really what it says is that the political left has to kind of deliver for Pacific voters now because of the huge investment they've received from the Pacific electorate.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.